everybody hear me? Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
This? Oh, very good, very good. I'm so glad to be able to do this breakout. It represents something that God has been stirring up inside of me and some of the members of our team for the last couple of years. As we have observed the growth of our church and the expanding of our influence, we have been able to anticipate as we were preparing to move here, because we studied the demographics, and it's a short distance, but there's a change in demographics. But we've not just in that way. It was already a truth 2-3 years ago that we needed to really start becoming a little more competent, a little more aware toward competency and proficiency. We wanted to grow in the area of inclusiveness within our community groups. You could look at our church 4 or 5 years ago and you can say, well, all the people are mostly white, right? And you would think, okay, this is easy. But even in that demographic, there's a great diversity of, and what happens is that shows itself in community groups. Community groups is a beautiful thing, but what it does is it is like an incubator. It grows what's there, and you know, and it highlights and it exposes what is there. And I would engage with different leaders, and more particularly different leaders who were wanting to serve well, but finding difficulty with leading their groups toward oneness. We found that there were group members that I met with, and they were talking about the varying experiences that they had in community groups. Some of them scarred to the point of not wanting to do a group again. And I realized that even as we were the way we were 3-4 years ago, we needed this. And then when you add upon it how God is growing us as a community, and we're seeing people with this, the range, the spectrum of every kind of diversity has increased here at Journey. And so I was praying with God and thinking and taking notes for a while about how do we introduce this? How do we become better? Where are the resources? And one of our group leaders, Mary Reamer, who is not in here. Oh, there she is. Mary brought it to my attention that I need to talk to someone from her group. And that someone is Erica McMullen. She's my friend standing here. And when she reached out to me, we connected and I began hearing of a interaction that took place in their group. But in addition to that, I was really impressed with how she engaged. A lot of people would not have had the skills to engage in that way. And then I found out that she has a background in this. So her career and her study and her practice has been in the area of diversity and inclusion for many years. She has worked with organizations, large ones, such as Johns Hopkins, in developing their mentoring program so that their medical staff can, or their doctors and their all of their staff can better appreciate the cultural nuances of the people that they serve. And so her experience is vast in this, and I appreciate you for having this conversation. What we're going to do today is really us kind of pulling back the veil on a conversation that's yet in progress. You know, we're not saying, hey, this is a finished product. We're actually hoping to develop a more complete training that we will offer to all group leaders. And it may be something that has different shapes. Maybe it's a multi-week thing or something you get to take home. But what we're hoping to do today is to invite you into the conversation so that you can engage with us, provide some feedback. We want to hear your thoughts. We want you to be a part of developing this, because I think it's going to become something that is vital to our next stages as a ministry. And so thank you all for really self-selecting to be here. And I really do appreciate that. With that, I want to introduce you to my friend, Erica McMullen.
Am I on? Yeah, hopefully. Good? Okay, excellent. So a couple of things before we get started is everyone's going to need a pen, and everybody is going to put one sheet from this little notepad that's here. So I want everyone to have that in right now, and then we will get started. Okay, and everybody has... Okay, so I walked around and I put a sheet of paper and I said, don't look at the paper, right? That makes everyone want to look at the paper. paper. But that sheet of paper that I put there, what I want you to do is I want you, it's just one sheet, so everyone will have to look at it, and I want you to just write down what's there for you. So everyone take that sheet of paper, turn it around. It's turned over. It's not the handouts. It's turned over, and it's an image. Okay, so turn that over and write down immediately what's there for you. I'm going to give you about 5 seconds, so you need to start writing pretty quickly. It's not really kind of big into writing sentences. Just write what's there for you. Do you have?
Oh, come join. Eric, join one of these tables.
There's a seat right here. There's a seat right there. Yeah. Wait, no. Okay. So what I want you all to do is I just want you to share with me some of the words or things that you wrote down on that paper.
Freedom.
Freedom. Excellent. Thank you. What else?
Serenity.
New day.
Horizons.
Excellent. Thank you. What else?
Someone said beauty.
Beauty. I heard a beer commercial.
Anheuser.
Hey, if it's there, let's go. Beer commercial, right? Any other, maybe some specific music. What else?
Beach.
Nice.
What was that?
Outer Banks.
Outer Banks.
What else? What else is not up here that you wrote down that's different?
Golden Corral.
Golden Corral. Okay.
Yes.
Can I lean into this a little bit? Can you explain that a little bit, Golden Corral?
Well, it looked like they're in the middle of kind of a corral.
Okay.
And then the sunset creates the golden aspect.
Look at that.
Okay.
And if I just didn't get enough food this
morning. I like it. Golden Corral.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right, what else? Anything else?
There was two of them. Two humans, two horses.
Two horses, so two, okay.
Peaceful.
Peaceful. And we'll take about two more.
Wind.
Wind.
Light.
Light. Okay, excellent. So what you notice is that I showed all of you an image. It was all the same image. Let me make that clear. Everyone had a photo, just this really, you know, very nice image of two horses, okay? What you find interesting is most people don't say what you have here are things that are very objective. There were two horses. I think there's some wind because I saw some movement. And there's some light. Whether that's a sunrise or sunset, that could be debatable based on what people think. Right, the horizon, right? And all of this is what objective. I mean, this is objective, this is all subjective, right? So immediately what happens is you realize that people really see things differently. People have different experiences. People could look at that and go to a specific location, right? Outer Banks. People look at that and they're hungry. Some people think freedom. I've done this exercise with a lot of different people. I use different photos. What's interesting is I use this particular photo and an individual said kind of like animal cruelty. And everyone in the room's like, because you feel the energy, right? Or someone says like trauma. And everyone's like, right? Like, I don't want to go there. Why would someone ever think that? Like, they're two horses. Why do you have to make it heavy, right? Can't we just go with freedom, beauty, America? Yay, right? But the reality is that some people look at that and they may think trauma. What if they fell off of a horse? What if their sibling or parent fell off of a horse and were forever disabled in some way? Right? Not everybody looks at that and gets the warm and fuzzies. Right? So depending on your lived experiences, depending on your perception, something as simple as an image means different things to different people. So we all walk around with this sense of multiple realities. When someone does not share the reality that we have, we immediately kind of other them, right? Like, you're the other person because you don't like the picture. And it's hard to take the time to get to know, well, why do you think of that thing, right? Because really what you want to do is defend what you think, right? It's the easier way to do that.
Okay? Do you want to?
Yeah, I think that when we talk about community groups and what we're hoping to accomplish in it, we cannot fast forward and skip to level 6, 7, or 8. We have to start at level 1. What we are inviting people into is not a It's not an easy thing. It's not a normal thing. You're bringing in a bunch of people who have different life stories, different influences, different experiences, and you're putting them in a room, and you're hoping for what really amounts to a miracle. Now, some of you guys have bumped into the difficulty of this, and it will be more and more difficult if you don't know that it is a miracle that's required. If you go into it thinking, this is just supposed to be easy. And a lot of times when we think something is supposed to be easy, we're thinking about our part in it. And a lot of times when we're thinking about our part in it, or our perspective, or the seat that we sit in, or the road that we have walked, we expect that it's going to work when people start walking the way we do, thinking the way we do, feeling the way that we do. And that's why we often find ourselves frustrated when we encounter difficulty, when the difficulty should have been assumed. It should have been expected and prepared for, but we find ourselves frustrated, and when we're frustrated, we need an object. And so why are you making this hard? What's wrong with this person? Why can't things be, why are you so sensitive? Why, you know, and now it feels like we have tried to jump on level 5 when we should have been saying, hey, we are strangers, and we are going to mean different things when we say things. We're going to see things differently, and it's going to take a while. As a matter of fact, we might even bump into each other's kind of old wounds on accident. All of that stuff may happen. We should not be surprised by that. But the issue of this starts with upfront realizing that there's all kind of perspectives in the room. We just invited a whole bunch of elements into a room. And the only way this works is if God shows out. God shows out. He does what only he can do. But at the same time, he is developing us and an awareness in us and a appreciation for his intentionality of diversity and an appreciation for the skill set that it takes to guide and lead that well. So I did want to kind of insert right there what's happening already. Whether you came to this breakout, whether you acknowledge that this is an issue or not, this is already happening. And part of the reason why you self-selected is because you've experienced some of that, haven't you? Indeed.
And as we continue, I want to give everybody two words to use, because we are going to ask you all a lot of questions and invite you to talk. And we know when that happens, you're kind of like, well, maybe I said something and I don't like the way that sounded. Or I use two things that are very simple. It's oops and ouch. It might seem kind of like, you know, for 6-year-olds, but I'm telling you, it works great for 46-year-olds too, and 56-year-olds and anywhere in between. So if you say something and you realize, okay, I don't like the way that landed, it's almost just like calling, you know, an oops and saying, let me restate that. And if someone says something, and you can use these really easy techniques within your groups, if someone says something and it lands on you in a certain way and you're like, ooh, but you don't feel comfortable enough to say that, it's hard. You can just say, I need to call an ouch. And let me explain to you why, when that word is used, it's hard for me, you know? Or, you know, when I hear the word, you know, adoptive parent or foster parent or step, that's an ouch for me. Because, you know, let me explain to you why. Those are words that then can invite people to start listening instead of kind of building up the defense, right? Because what happens is when people raise their hand, they're like, I'm offended. Oh, once you say the offended word, I'm sorry, it's over. People can't hear past that. Because as humans, we really default into a couple of different boxes, and we'll talk about that. Yeah. But oops and ouch, for some reason, and I am not kidding, I was at a children's hospital in Wilmington, Delaware on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday of this week. And I heard a physician, I put it out there, a physician chair chief who, I mean, he must have been in his 60s. He called an ouch on the orthopedic surgeon. He did. He's like, you know, what you said about my department, I need to call an ouch. Like, that makes me feel like X, Y, and Z. And then the other physician was like, oh, I never thought about that. Now let me think about, you know, what I said. And you can have the conversation. So it might seem juvenile at first when I heard that. I'm like, really? I'm going to go to adults and organizations and tell them to use oops and ouch. I'm telling you, it works. So that's a tool that you can immediately take back and introduce into your groups. And as we kind of continue to do this, we want to know from you, what are some ways that you think help people feel included? And what are some ways that help people belong? Because we think about the ABCs of groups, right, in group life. So what are some ways that when you invite strangers, frankly, into your home, God bless you for doing that, right, when you invite strangers into your home, what are some ways that help them feel included and that kind of belonging piece? So I'll look, yes.
In my life, I've been a part of some recovery groups, you know, and I think what is amazing. whatever, is that there's no judgments, or there shouldn't be, when people are coming from all different walks of life. So particularly in our group, you know, thanks for sharing, and really no passing of opinion, and kind of setting that precedent from the very beginning, and then every other week kind of bringing it up, just administration rules is huge, because the purpose of these groups is not to, you're giving advice in the sense of, hey, we're here for you, vent to us, shoot me a text, that's about it. Other than that, and giving godly advice and all that stuff, it's the name of the church, Journey. Everybody's on their own journey, and especially in my particular group, the guys are married except for one person, and whenever we talk about wives and stuff like that, well, he lost his wife extremely tragically, and it's a very, very sensitive topic, and you want to go there, just, I mean, like, meaning like to talk about, oh, my wife, this and that, but we know that he's still dealing with that pain like it happened yesterday.
Yeah.
So, being ultra, ultra sensitive to that, not passing any judgment, thanks for sharing, whether it's a oops, ouch, whatever, making that abundantly clear as leaders to everybody in the group that we don't do that, I think is a way to encourage people to open up and also to kind of attract other people, because the killer, I think you guys were touching upon, is when somebody gets scarred, they'll never come back, and they'll tell four and five of their other friends, so...
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that. That was great. And yeah, I'll take that. And we'll that idea of kind of creating your group covenant right in advance, whether you call it group norms or group covenant, or you know what it is that's kind of accepted and not accepted, or basically like this is how we roll in this group. That is critical. That is foundational, because if you don't set those expectations from the beginning and give people the language and the verbiage and the tools, and I think that's something that, you know, Kambui and I have talked about kind of creating more of, then you step into the situation unprepared, and that's worse.
That's the... oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say we're still at the, you know, end of telling all the stories. And I think what really helped at the beginning was when something went really well to say, you know, I just want to pause and first off just say thank you, like, and your transparency, your authenticity, or, you know, we have an older lady who I think kind of gave some guidance, but it was super sound, lots of wisdom. And I was like, I'm so grateful to have you in this group to add this other perspective of I've been there, I've done that. You know, it's going to be such a valuable spice to this group. And I think as you go through each person, as you try to say, that's a good thing that you did, thank you, and acknowledge it, I think that it makes them feel like, all right, this is a safe place. She appreciates me. And I think they're more likely to, you know, see that. So I don't know. I think just acknowledging good behavior.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, we all want to be valued and loved and respected. I mean, I think that's a common human kind of want. Yes, Eric.
One of the things that we started doing, which helps really create that culture of inclusiveness, is we start every small group now with sunshines and rains. And it's something else that we did with our kids, but we started to do it in our group, and it is... change the environment immensely. And so what we do is everyone goes around and quickly and briefly says what their sunshines and rains have been from the last week. So what's happened that's really good in your life is your sunshines, what's really got you down. And out of that, it forces everyone to know where they're coming in that week. Yeah. And there's been certain times where there were such heavy rains on the heart of someone, we call it an audible.
Yeah.
And said, we're not going to force ourselves through this discussion guide or through the sermon this week. We're going to sit on that and allow you to have the floor and make sure we're there through prayer. And so when you do that, it starts breaking down these barriers and allows people to say, I can trust these people around you. And that's been really, really valuable this time. I've never done that before, but we started doing it. And it's been a very powerful tool for creating a culture of inclusiveness.
That conveys care as well. Which is a really kind of the why of why put in this effort, why pursue this development as an organization and as leaders. is because of the brand that we talked about. Our brand is accountability, belonging, and care. That's our brand. And it is important that we don't undermine our brand by just a lack of awareness, a lack of kind of capacity for things that don't fit within our prepackage of what we plan to do. So that's a great example, Eric, of being, you prepare for a predictable environment, but you also recognize that sometimes what God is bringing into the environment is not predictable, you know, and so you're ready to let your values lead you in how to respond. Care is a value for us. How do you care for someone who's lost their wife tragically or still working through that? You may not do the hottest new study, you know, because of that. Rebecca, your group does some version of rain and was it sunny days and rainy days? Cherries and pits. Yeah, I like that. Very good. Okay, so was there another, were you reaching?
I was just going to say that we remind everybody often that what happens in group stays in group.
Mm-hmm.
We do that really often, because unless somebody specifically wants it to be known outside of our group, we want to make sure it stays there, that small group of folks are the only folks that know about it, are going to be talking about it, praying about it, whatever. Now, if they want it shared, then we're happy to do that, but we want that. We don't ever want to break that trust, because if you do, you're going to lose folks quick.
Yeah, let's think. That's really, really a good practice, and it reminds me of a quality that's important in this effort. It's intentionality. That's something that you do intentionally, regularly. There are certain things that we're going to discover that we ought to adopt and do intentionally, even when we're not sure for what reason we're doing it. That means we don't know the need. We don't know exactly who would be offended by this, that, or the other. For instance, here's a good example. Andy Stanley will intentionally say, hey, if you're out there and you are here for the first time today, and maybe you haven't identified yourself as a Jesus follower, and you know how he'll do that. And he's intentional about not assuming that everybody in the room has the same beliefs. He's still going to teach the same thing, but he does something intentionally so that he doesn't trip somebody up and they check out. So you may not know who that person is or what their specific situation is, but there are certain things that we will discover that we need to adopt and do intentionally each time. Talking about the safety is an example of that, or what stays in here, or what starts here stays here. Very good. All right.
So, question in this idea of, you know, when people might say things that are hard or things that we don't agree with, why do you think it's so difficult for us to kind of lean into that? And instead, you know, most of us kind of default into like pulling away a little bit from that. Because it's hard, right? Yes.
Feel strongly enough that we're not comfortable at that point to really debate it, you know, in that setting, whatever setting we're in. But one thing we did that echoes what you said and you said and kind of relates is making it clear there's permission to have the negativity or the confusion. I don't follow that. I don't agree with that. I don't understand that. Because some of the diversity we have in our groups, I think, aren't what we normally think of as diversity, but it's like a diversity of where you are in your faith walk. So, you know, we had some people who were like, you know, baby Christians, for lack of a better expression, and people who were raised in a dip, you know, like Catholicism. And so lots of times we can't assume we all have the same perspective. And in terms of confrontation, I think for us, particularly as females in the groups I've been in, it was like, I don't want to hurt your feelings. I don't want to cause a lot of controversy. You know, we want it to be a really pleasant environment.
Mm. You brought up a couple of good things, Terry. And
we do want it to be a pleasant environment. We want people to like our group. I think that's the human side of us, right? We want people. No one says, I hope that there's a few people who really don't like coming. No, we want people to like our group, and we personalize that. We internalize it. That becomes a part of whether or not we're doing our job well or whether we're worthwhile leaders. And a lot of pressure is stored up in that area, and that pressure is usually tapped into in a surprised manner. There's a situation that comes up that you didn't expect. Now, the intensity level varies. So on one level, it's like someone may say, and you may have made permission for someone to say, I don't really get it. And it's easy to categorize that. You could say, you know what, you really don't get it, probably because, you know, you don't say this, but in your mind, you're like, you're just kind of growing in your faith, and this is kind of new for you, this concept, and that's not really that hard to deal with. The next intensity level is not, I don't get it, it's I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I agree with that. So now the intensity has raised up because you might agree with that. And now you see this opposition. Are you opposing me? Are you opposing my leadership? Are you opposing our church? Are you opposing my family's history and culture? What are you opposing? So we feel all of that going on. That's another level of intensity. And we're usually not ready for that. And then the intensity is raised to another level when someone is not saying, I don't get it. They're not saying, I don't agree. They're saying, I'm offended by that. That bothers me. Now it's like, red alert, right? It's like all of a sudden, it's like, what do I do in this moment? People are looking, and now I feel like I'm on the defense. So that is a thing that comes up in our group. We want people to be pleased with our group, but we sometimes go into it. I keep going back to this. We go into it with this idea that everyone is going to always be pleased. We start storing up anxiety tension. And we don't make a plan. We don't have a preparation for the time when someone's going to hit their ouch moment or when someone's going to blurt something out that's an oops, but it's going to cause an ouch. We don't prep for that. And then all of that stored up energy is on blast in real time. And then we find ourselves not reacting the way that we want to as leaders. Does that make sense? So it starts from the beginning in the expectation of what it takes to really achieve oneness.
And I think the other thing, too, is this idea of not walking in with the assumption. So you said some really good things in this idea of, you know, and I want to pause a moment and almost just define, like, what is diversity? Mm. Right? Because you said not in maybe the diversity that we might think it is, you know, so religious diversity, diversity of how we were raised and our backgrounds and spirituality and faith and religion and God and Jesus, right? But when we say diversity, usually where do most people go? Race. And then the second, I heard it, religion, gender, right? So in a context like this, it's usually, you might think race and religion. In a lot of the contexts I work, it's kind of like, it'll go, you know, race, gender, a lot of times hierarchy in an organization. Oh, well, you're here, and I'm here, because I'm the leader, and I have all the initials after my name. Thank you very much, so don't you dare talk to me in the hallway, right? So we have a lot of hierarchical issues in a lot of corporate areas that I work in. So this idea of, right, race, gender, religion, but there's so much more than there's just that, right? It's almost like if I said, well, I'm going to make an assumption. I see two white women here. You guys are exactly the same. I'm going to invite you to my kitchen. I've met white women. You're good. I got you. We're all the same. You're the same, right? Like, what else do I need to know? I see three white guys here. You're all the same. Well, no, you don't have as much hair, but that's okay. But, right, I mean, that's what we kind of do, where we kind of say, well, we're all Christian. So that was an ouch. You can call an ouch.
Oops. Yes. Wait, oops.
Awesome. Awesome. That was an ouch.
Call that out.
The ouch for him. See, I love that. Awesome. Right? It allows you to really, it does. It allows you to go through that moment, though, and say that oops and ouch, and it becomes part of your common language. But it's also this idea of, well, you know, we're all Christians, so we all believe all the same stuff.
Or if I might interject, we're.
Yeah, please.
Do we create room for diversity in the things or the perspectives of mature Christians? Because a lot of times it's like, oh, well, you're immature, or you're just getting started, or I'm here. Well, what if you got a room full of people who've been walking with Jesus for a while, but yet they still have different perspectives?
Yeah. And I know in our group, too, like, a lot of us had a Catholic upbringing, so things will be said, and we're like, I don't even know what we're talking about, right? Yes, Tasha.
I've also run into economic status as diversity, even with us, we have four kids, so like going out to expensive meals with the group, or even other group members who one person works and one person stays home, we can't do some of the things that the other people can do. So being sensitive to that is really crucial, because it can make the people who don't have a lot of money feel like an outsider, and so they just won't come, and we run into some problems with that.
That's an excellent point. Socioeconomic status, what are some other diversity? I call them diversity dimensions or diversity identities. What are some other diversity dimensions?
Education.
Age. And you also mentioned marital status, right, in the beginning with your group, so that's another big one. And someone else had mentioned children. Yeah, whether you have children or not. What are some other ones?
Experiences. Yeah. That's the invisible one. Mm-hmm. You know what I find intriguing is I'm sort of having this conversation in part to develop you for your next group, because the greatest opportunity to really screw this up is in the first couple of weeks of your group. I mean, people often decide whether they're going to stay in a group or not based off of things that happened. So if we're not aware of this, if we haven't begun as a leader to develop and start be preparing for this and thinking about this, we could blow it early. So we want to acknowledge that, you know, this is not something I'm going to go to one session and now I'm a master at it, but I need to start thinking about it and finding resources and growing and developing for the next time I have an opportunity. Of course, right now you can employ some of those things, but really it's about how do we create a culture as a team.
And thinking about experience, you know, military experience, right? I mean, I really want to broaden from just, you know, the race and gender piece, because yes, that's there, and ethnicity. What about languages? What about places you grew up? I remember when I grew up in South Florida, and yes, you really could cut off like Broward, West Palm, and Miami-Dade, and we could float away into the water and really be another place. I agree with that, right? But that's where I grew up. I didn't know anything different, and then I moved to Ohio. Wow, culture shock. Okay, I spent 12 years there. I can rant and rave about all the wonderful opportunities that Ohio has given me, and it's all true. But I went from like soda to pop. I'm like, what's pop? Right? I am not kidding. I walked into something like a 7-Eleven, which wasn't a 7-Eleven because they don't have 7-Eleven there. And I was like, so do you have any cold soda? Because I wanted a 2-liter that was cold. Okay. And the gentleman's like, well, he's thinking I mean club soda. We're having this whole back and forth. And I'm like, do you just have a cold 2-liter like Sprite? Well, why didn't you just say you wanted some pop? And I'm like, some what? I had never even heard the term. Okay, I learned, they say please, and I would say yes. Please means excuse me, repeat yourself. Right? I'm like, I just entered foreign land. I mean, there's a whole other cultural context, right? Depending on where you live. So when you talk about experiences, you come into these settings and you think, well, two white women, you're all the same. You're not. You're not. And that's really important to broaden that context of diversity and diverse experiences. And really lean into it. And I'm going to point you to something I have here, which is we walk through this ladder of perception, which is what we did with the photo. So I want you to, you can take that, look at it. And the takeaway from that is just important for you to know that within milliseconds, you don't see two horses. You have an emotional response to those two horses. And it may be a place like the Outer Banks. It may be freedom. It may be a beauty. It may be a beer commercial. You don't stay in the photo as a camera would capture it. You immediately have an emotional and physical response. You form beliefs about that photo, and you may take action on it, right? And you turn that into your relationships with people. I immediately see you. I form an opinion about you. I have an emotional response to you. I may, depending on what action I'm gonna take now, based on maybe what I think you are, who I think you are, what your story is, right? And so looking at these kind of four responses to fear with that, like I'm, you know, talking in front of you, and your perception of me is, okay, she's female, she's black, she clearly has some type of knowledge, right, in this field, but you really don't know anything about me, right? You don't know that I'm a first-generation American. You don't know that I speak two languages. You've learned that I grew up in the South. You know, you don't know I have three kids. right? You don't know I've been to the morgue and identified my cousin's body. You don't know all these experiences that I've come to today. But you immediately see me and you have these emotional and kind of ideas about who I am, right? And then when I show up perhaps different, and it's kind of like, wow. It's like, whoa, what, you know? So expect those things. Expect the moment. I think that's what we're really trying to get you to see. And on that second grid, one of the biggest reasons we don't lean into this is that we're afraid. Mm-hmm. And you said such a good job of saying that, right? Like, oh, how am I going to figure that out, right? I want to pause because I know you had a comment. Oh, I'm sorry. If it comes back, I know. If it comes back, just do that. But the four responses of fear, really, is this idea. I know you all have probably heard of fight or flight, right? So it's this idea, but I want to kind of go to the bottom where you, and it's relational in the sense that you disengage. So you either want to just kind of like hide, you want to avoid, right, what's going on. Okay, we're just going to like kind of pretend we didn't hear that. We're going to keep it moving because I have no idea what to say or do about this. Or you may just absolutely freeze, right? I've had that happen too. I've had some incidences where I'm like, they're like, what did you say? And I'm like, nothing. Because my brain shut down. Because I couldn't believe what I was hearing in front of me. I was just like, and after you kind of come to and you're like, wow, okay, maybe I should have done that. Maybe, but you can't even react in the moment. There's like no facial affect. I was just like, okay, and walk right out, right? So you just completely freeze. But if you make an intentional, right, and conscious decision to engage and lean into whatever that is, you have two options. The first one is fight, which is the, I'm going to win this conversation because I'm right, because I know better, because my lived experience has told me X, Y, and Z, and I don't buy yours. Or frankly, like, I just don't agree with you. And that's okay. You may not agree, right? But it's this idea of fighting, you're doing it with anger, insult, blame, and mistrust. Mm. Or you're going to go to a place where you're going to face this. And the defend that you see there is you're going to defend the relationship. This relationship is worth me leaning into to kind of figure out how we can come to a better place. Right? So that's how I want you to see defend. I don't want you to see it as being defensive. I want you to see it as, I want to defend this relationship. This relationship is important, it's worth defending. And so in order to do that, your emotion has to be connection. It has to be, frankly, from your heart. Because your mind is gonna tell you all kinds of other things. It's gonna tell you to run away, it's gonna tell you to freeze, it's gonna tell you to fight. It has to come from your heart. And frankly, that's part of, right, the love of God. It has to come mm-hmm. from your heart. And so really what you're doing there, if you see, it says preserve and mitigate. I want to preserve this relationship. I want to understand what's going on. And one of my key words is always, there's things I hear and see and I don't understand is, tell me more about that. Mm-hmm. Not from a tell me more. Right? Yeah, mm-hmm, tell me. Mm, yeah, I don't know about that, but tell me more. It's a true, open, connected, tell me more about that, Michael. What did you, yeah, all of those type of state, I don't, help me understand that.
How did you feel when
yes.
going to extend that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you may not agree, but at least you have an understanding of what's behind there, and then you can kind of come to a different place.
There are a few critical things that we need to acknowledge in order to really face this thing head on. There is the pushback that we have within ourselves. Part of it, as Erica mentioned, the fight or flight. We have been raised in a culture that celebrates winners. Our country celebrates winners. You know, our national anthem is about winning. You know, we have our posters on our walls of people who won. Not many people have a poster of the losing competitor in something. Like, you're not going to have a poster on your wall that's highlighting, you know, Joe Frazier on the ground. You know, you want to highlight Muhammad Ali, right? And so we have this culture that says when you win, you get a pizza party, right? When you win, you are the man. You get elevated.
And because we have so much of our culture that trains us in that, when we get into conflict, we always view conflict as having a winner and a loser. And so who gets to be the winner and who gets to be the loser? Now, if I have been trained that winning has all the value, then I'm going to have a certain amount of anxiety about losing. How I respond to that could be either in being aggressive or passive, so that I don't even engage. And being overly aggressive or overly passive, neither of those can allow us to achieve what God wants to do. A lot of people actually put religious tones on it. It's like, you know what? God just really wants us to focus on you know, love and prayer. That's a way that people often don't engage in something that is an ouch moment for someone. Something that is a challenge that needs to be discussed, where there's a clear diversity of experience. Oh, we're just not going to talk about all of that because it's God's will. But that's not oneness. You see, here's an important thing. We have to acknowledge that God made us. And God made some of us 5'3". Did I get you right? Five, around there? And made, who's the tallest person in here? Somebody made some of us 6 foot. Chris, 6'5" or 6" or something like that, right? And so the thing about that is that's God's will. That's not a problem. That's not a mistake. And so oneness does not require sameness. And a lot of people will mix up oneness and sameness. And a lot of people will require sameness. Like, we can be one as long as you. And no, that's not how it works. And so the other thing that's at play, 1 second, I'll come right back to you. The other thing that's at play is in order for us to, sometimes it's my own sin that's in the way of me engaging. It's not just how difficult the other person is. I am not arrived at the place God is going to have me in the end. So there are some times when someone reaches the perfect frequency to tap into my sin that was not ready for that. That means I might have to. And if I acknowledge that there's an actual issue there, that means I might have to do something different. I might have to think different. I might have to explore alternative thoughts. And I would rather stay in the comfort of my sin. That's just reality. And a lot of times people will try to whitewash something, you know, throw some sugar on it, when in fact it's an attempt to hide the fact that, gosh, I have to change something in me. And it's okay for us as leaders, even when we have the title of leader, to say, I still have things in me that need growth and I need to change at times. If we can do that, then we can really hop into the work of the reconciliation ministry that Jesus has given us. Mike.
I was just thinking, I was sitting here thinking this conversation and filtering it through a recent experience. And for me as a leader, the balance sometimes is, you want people to feel inclusive, but we have to stand for something. Mm-hmm. And here's the context I'm processing it through. About 3, maybe 4 weeks ago, had a retreat with some guys. There was one individual that I knew was offended. I had a conversation with him about something that had happened a month ago. An hour later, we're in conversation, and he's talking about Mormons and how their beliefs, they love Christ, and he's, if you're good with Christ, I'm good with Christ, we're all good. So I'm balancing. I want him to feel included because I already know he feels excluded by some comments. So I don't, but I have to confront the reality. Hey, there are some truth, you know, there's some truth that we're not getting to. And I don't know that I went about it the right way. And I won't get into all that, but that's just some of the, I think that's not unique to me. I think as leaders, we all find ourselves in that type of situation. And when you're sitting in the den or when you're sitting in the kitchen, how do you balance including, and how do you balance the other people that because you didn't address it, they now feel excluded, that, whoa, I'm not so certain, does anything go here? And yeah. That's a tough one.
That's helpful as we come toward a conclusion of our conversation. It kind of leads into what I wanted to say, because this is not easy. This is often messy. And what we need to be able to do is redefine what it means to be a leader, in the sense that we're not there to resolve things. We're not there to fix things. We're not there to be the final authority on all things. We are not there to make problems go away. If we somehow internalize that that's our role, then we will do things which are inappropriate and undermine the process and the space that we need to become comfortable living in, is where a thing is not resolved, but it is not ignored either. You understand what I'm saying? It's, we don't have to choose between ignoring a thing or trying to press a button and fix it and make the problem go away. We don't like discomfort. But sometimes we need to live in that we are not in the ultimate comfort when Christ comes and we're all one. There's some challenge, but there's much benefit of engaging with each other, even if at the end of the engagement, we are not going to be completely in one accord, but we'll know we love each other. A lot of times it takes the four things that we talk about often in community group as the posture of a leader. We talked about intentionality. That's one of them. Curiosity is another one. Curiosity tells someone that you care about them and you don't think you're the guru of all things, right? Then you've got intentionality, you got curiosity, you got teachability. You're still learning. When you talk about picking up a resource and thinking of thoughts that were not your thoughts before and how wonderful of a process that was, you start to create a culture in your group that there's something good about engaging with thoughts that are different than your own. That's not a no-no. You give permission for people to share some thoughts that they suppose might be different than the prevailing ideas. Then you come closer to this. And the last one that you want to have is humility. It's the most important one. And I think, Mike, I've been where you're at many, many times is, gosh, this is kind of important to our doctrine. Or, my goodness, this seems kind of a dangerous idea or thought. But I want to support this person. Sometimes people, you may have experienced this, they seem educated. So they're influential and they're saying something that's completely wrong. There are times when I feel the tension to correct this, so for the sake of everybody. And the humility in it is, first of all, that God's big. Second of all, I get used to saying, from my experience, I get used to saying, the way I have seen and processed this so far, things like that don't make me the authoritative figure on it. I have to be careful with it being a pastor in a group. An elder. We have to be careful that we, because everything we say is boom. So we've run into that, right? And so I think what we wanted to kind of leave you with thinking, and we really want to, we implore you all to join us, be thinking about this, be coming up with questions that we need to seek answers for. You don't have to have the answer, but I want you all to be coming up with questions that we need to be thinking about. I want you all to be looking for the elements that are relevant to this conversation and us developing into the type of ministry that glorifies God by creating safe spaces and healthy spaces for everyone to experience community. We need you in that. This is the beginning of a conversation. But I sense in the spirit that God is carrying us to another place that we're going to need this preparation. Does that bear witness to anyone? We're going to need this preparation? Good.
I just wanted to say that group leaders that we're not responsible for someone's spiritual development and their connection with the Holy Spirit and yada yada. However, we do bear the responsibility of drawing them nearer to the message that the church is putting out, not pushing them away from it, at least. Like, and I, especially as someone's a control freak as myself, and this, you know, this happened actually in your sharing your experience. Somebody's talking about a podcast of a person who I knew wasn't Christian and had some, different. It wasn't, a part of the plan. And you want to say something, but you got to have that reassurance that on Sunday, James and the pastors and the Holy Spirit that's present will write that all out.
Yeah.
But our job today is to make sure that meeting doesn't go off the rails,
yeah.
That people share and they come back.
Yeah.
So the right. Leader aspect is sometimes we're almost there. We're just taking the title of getting people there and having them come to Sunday.
We're creating a safe and predictable environment. So again, our brand, accountability, belonging, care, we're not actually going to be able to have another comment. I'm so sorry about that. We have reached our time. What we understood going into this is that the subject matter is way larger than what we could, finish in 45 minutes. But we hope that the thoughts that were stoked through this conversation will continue. And we want to thank you guys for joining us in this. And like I said, please do feel free to follow up with me. If you've got questions for Erica, Erica is a wealth of knowledge and resources, and she considers these kind of things all day. She's partnering with us in an ongoing way so that we can develop in this. So if you're wanting to contact her, you can contact us through our group's email, groups@journeyrva.com. Anything that has to do with diversity and inclusiveness, please do put that in the subject, and I will forward it to Erica, and we'll get together and start developing the next stages of this conversation and the training that goes with it.
I think the people who weren't here for this session could definitely have benefited from some of this conversation. So consider writing up some of these notes and some practical advice, and over the next few weeks or so, sending it out to all the leaders, just foods for thought related to diversity and inclusiveness. Because I think all of us desire to have practical tools or ways we can do things when we encounter, for example, having a small group on election night and someone walking in and saying, "You should vote for Trump," or something, or whatever, how are we going to break this political diversity down?
Yeah.
Or whatever. But the point is, this is an important conversation to create an environment of inclusiveness, and I think everyone could benefit from the discussion.
Yeah. You're right, and I agree. So we're going to prepare to send something out in the coming weeks for all of the breakouts. So thank you for that. You all, thank you for being here. Go ahead and make it to your next breakouts. Again, as a reminder, the next breakout here will be the Emmanuel Ministry, upping the relational component to promote spiritual growth in your group. The ending well, successful landing is going to be across the hall in the warehouse. All right, guys. See you soon. Can y'all make some noise for Erica? And make some noise for yourselves. You guys gave us good input today.